Chapter 15. Furious George. According to Dad's message, he was done with his photography session. He grabbed some sandwiches at the Gorilla Grill, and we met up at Mom's office for dinner. Normally, Mom hated eating dinner in her office. She said she spent enough time there during the day. However, it was cold that night, which meant that our trailer would be freezing, and besides, she wanted to keep an eye on Furious George. George was now in chimpanzee solitary, a cell situated right next to Mom's office. There was a large window between them, allowing us to observe George, and allowing him to observe us, too. The cell was really two rooms, divided by a wall of bars down the middle, so that someone could be in there with a quarantine animal but not be in danger of getting hurt. George's side of the cell was actually quite nice. It wasn't supposed to be a punishment so much as a safe place to take an animal off display. There were plenty of ropes to climb and toys to play with. George was swinging about, looking happy and perfectly mentally balanced. Therefore, Mom wasn't paying much attention to him. Instead, she was completely focused on me. I told her and Dad everything that had happened that day, with one exception. I didn't own up to swiping the kazoo costume, figuring that would get me in trouble. Instead, I said I'd merely happened to stumble across Freddy and Astro's Cap colluding. I still told them Astro's Cap had threatened me, but claimed he was run off for picking on a kid. Normally, Mom might have seized on the gaps in my story, but that night she and Dad had too much else to deal with. They listened silently as I recounted facing the bullies, my run-in with Astro's Cap, and my conversation with Charlie Connor. But when it was all over, Mom was so worked up she didn't know what to discuss first. She kept starting to say one thing, then changing her mind and trying to say something else, before finally deciding to focus on Vance.
"I can't believe... Why didn't you... I specifically told you not to... This bullying has gone far enough. I'm calling your principal again."
She reached for her office phone, but I blocked her.
"Mom, don't," I pleaded. "That will only make Vance Jessup angrier at me."
"Don't be ridiculous," Mom told me. "The school needs to handle this. Those boys need to be punished."
"Vance and Tim Jim don't care about being punished," I said.
"But I know they don't want to face the football players again. I think they'll leave me alone after what happened today."
"Well, maybe not," Dad cautioned, "and the football team won't always be there to protect you."
"That's right," Mom echoed. "So the next time one of these guys comes at you," Dad said, "you just haul off and punch him square in the nose."
"Jack," Mom gasped, "don't tell Teddy that. It'll only get him in more trouble."
"He's in enough trouble as it is," Dad countered, then turned back at me. "Your average bully is really a coward. He only survives by intimidation. If you fight back, it'll completely catch him off guard. One good sock, right here," Dad pointed to his nose. "You'll bloody him up nice and good, and he'll never bother you again."
"Or he'll get angry and pound our son to a pulp," Mom said tartly.
"He won't, Charlene," Dad said. "Trust me, this works."
"How would you know?" Mom asked suspiciously. "Have you done this?"
Dad shrugged. "I've dealt with a few bullies in my time." Mom's mouth dropped open. This was obviously news to her.
"When?"
"Middle school," Dad said. "High school, too. And a couple years ago in South Africa, this meathead in a bar tried to shake me down."
"Enough," Mom said before he could go on. "Teddy, don't listen to your father. Violence is never the answer. Promise me that you won't try to fight anyone."
I glanced at my father. Behind Mom's back, he signaled me to say yes, though when Mom looked at him, he pretended to be scratching his head.
"Okay," I said, "but right now I'm more worried about Astro's Cap than Vance Jessup."
Mom put a reassuring hand on my shoulder.
"Oh, I doubt he'll threaten you again. He was probably just trying to scare you off."
"I'm not worried about him hurting me," I said. "I'm worried about what he's up to."
"What do you mean?" Mom asked.
"Well, Freddy was already angry at Fun Jungle," I explained, "so maybe he hired this guy to get rid of Kazoo. But the guy's still hanging around. That doesn't make any sense unless they're planning to do something else nasty. Something to Shark Odyssey, maybe."
Mom and Dad shared a look, mulling this over.
Neither seemed to completely buy it.
"Well, we don't really have any evidence that this Astro's Cap guy had anything to do with Kazoo," Dad told me. "All we know is that he was at the scene of the crime after it happened, like a lot of other people, and that he knows Freddy."
"He looked suspicious," I said, "and he got really upset when he thought I was following him."
"Well, that doesn't make him a criminal," Mom said.
"And no matter how angry Freddy Malloy was, I can't imagine him hiring anyone to get rid of Kazoo."
He loves animals. No one would even attempt a show like his if they didn't. I sighed, frustrated by my parents' arguments, and then I thought of something else. Arthur Koenig also might have taken Kazoo. In all the excitement with Astro's Cap, I'd forgotten about Arthur. Mom and Dad stared at me, surprised.
"Why do you say that?" Dad inquired.
"I overheard him trying to sell something to someone today. He was being really suspicious and asking for a lot of money."
"Did he mention Kazoo specifically?" Mom asked.
"No," I said. "But he said he'd taken a big risk to get whatever he was selling, and that if people found out, he could go to jail."
Dad and Mom shared an intrigued look. "Sounds like he was definitely up to something," Dad agreed.
Mom frowned. "It does, but Arthur's a good, caring keeper. I can't see him taking Kazoo either."
"Well, someone had to," I exclaimed. "And if we can't figure out who, I'm going to jail for this."
"Well, what about Charlie Connor?" Mom suggested. "We know he has a criminal background."
"Charlie actually had some good reasons to explain why he hadn't done it," I said.
"He said he didn't have the slightest idea how to steal or fence a koala."
"Well, you wouldn't expect him to admit that he did, would you?" Dad asked.
"No, but I still believe him."
I hesitated before adding, "Charlie said we ought to consider Christy."
Mom recoiled slightly.
"Christy? Why would she steal Kazoo?"
"To get a koala," I answered. "Charlie said she knew the koala exhibit better than anyone."
Mom shook her head. "No one who knew anything about koalas would steal one. They're virtually impossible to care for."
I thought back to Christy and how concerned she'd been about Kazoo. It was hard to imagine her faking that to throw me off her trail. She was the one who had told me that Kazoo had such a specialized diet, and that he'd starve to death if he wasn't rescued soon. If she knew that, why would she take him?
"I'm just telling you what Charlie told me," I said.
"Well, Charlie's wrong," Mom told me. "I think we can rule Christy out."
"Well, what about the other koala keepers?" Dad suggested. "There were three of them, right? Elizabeth Ames, Jen Weeks, and... shoot, I can't remember the third."
"Ashley Thomas," Mom said. "They worked with Kazoo less than Christy did, but they all had to learn just as much about koalas. All of them would have known the extreme difficulties involved in taking care of Kazoo."
"Well, maybe they didn't do it to get a pet for themselves," I said.
"Maybe some rich collector like Flora Hancock paid them to steal a koala for her. She has enough money to buy all the eucalyptus in the world."
"None of those keepers would have stolen Kazoo," Mom stated flatly.
"Maybe Arthur Koenig stole him for Flora Hancock," I said.
"I don't think any keeper would steal a zoo animal," Mom told me.
"Well, whoever did it had to know how to get in and out without being seen," I argued, "which means the thief had to know the koala exhibit really well. If it wasn't a keeper, then who was it?"
"What about one of the contractors who built the exhibit?" Dad suggested. "Suppose some carpenter had his eye on Kazoo all along.
Maybe he knows Flora Hancock is willing to pay big bucks for a koala, so he builds a secret entrance into the exhibit, bides his time for a few weeks, then sneaks into the zoo one night and swipes Kazoo."
Mom frowned at him. "You really think so?"
Dad shrugged.
"It's possible. And it explains how the thief got Kazoo without showing up on tape. Even if Christy or Arthur or this Astro's Cap guy took the koala, we still haven't figured out how they did it without going through the door."
"Maybe Astro's Cap was one of the carpenters," I exclaimed. "Maybe Freddy approached him at some point during the construction of the exhibit and they came up with a plan to steal Kazoo.
Or maybe he works for the company that installed the security system here." Dad was getting excited now.
"Maybe he built in his own secret access code, which would explain how he could get into the koala exhibit and Shark Odyssey. And he might know how to override the security cameras as well, so he could get in and out without being recorded."
He and I both looked to Mom expectantly. The frown hadn't left her face.
"It seems awfully far-fetched," she said.
"Maybe, but it's still possible," Dad countered. "In fact, I'd say it's the best we've come up with so far."
He turned to me. "What'd you do with his license plate number?"
"I called Summer," I told him, "and she's going to pass it on to her father. She says he knows people who can trace it."
"We ought to pass it on to Marge, too," Mom recommended.
"She won't do anything with it," I said. "All she cares about is framing me for this."
Mom sighed. "Marge might have a chip on her shoulder where you're concerned, but she's still in charge of security here. She should know about this. Maybe if it comes from one of us rather than you, she'll take it more seriously."
"I guess it can't hurt."
I dutifully wrote down the license plate number for my mother, who began texting it to Marge. And while we're at it, we should let her know about Arthur Koenig, too. Mom paused in mid-text. Teddy, for the last time, I don't see Arthur doing this. Well, he was selling something he wasn't supposed to have, I argued. Even if it wasn't Kazoo, Marge should know about it. Good point. Mom went back to composing her message. Did you say there was footage of this Astros cap online? Dad asked. Maybe we could forward that to Marge and the McCrackens as well. Sure, I said. I'll see if I can find it. I got on my mother's computer, feeling more upbeat than I had in a while. Astro's cap being a construction worker was certainly the best explanation we'd come up with to explain how Kazoo had been taken. And there was no shortage of people he could have been working for. Freddy, Arthur, Flora, if not a combination of any of them. There was only one thing that still nagged at me. What had Astro's cap been doing at Shark Odyssey? It took me a few tries to find the right YouTube video. A dozen more recordings of the disaster at Koalaville had been uploaded since lunch, but I eventually located it. We watched it play on the computer. Mom, who'd only heard about the events from Dad and me, just shook her head in dismay as they unfolded before her. Dad, who'd lived through it, stood behind her, struggling to keep from laughing. Finally, the camera settled on Astro's cap, and I paused the video. There, I said, that's him. Dad zoomed in so that Astro's cap face filled the screen, then squinted at the pixelated image. It's not easy to make him out with the glasses and the hat, he said. I might have seen him before, but I can't be sure. How about you, hon? He looked to Mom. He seems familiar to me, too, Mom said, though I can't figure out why. Maybe we saw him around one of the construction sites, Dad began, though he didn't get to finish the thought, because Furious George suddenly went nuts. He'd been so quiet up until then, even Mom had forgotten about him. Now he let out a nerve-jangling scream that made all of us leap out of our seats. We spun around to find him racing about his cell like a maniac. He bounced off the walls, flinging everything he could get his hands on, screeching the entire time. Every few seconds he would return to the viewing window and pound on it so hard I thought he might break through. Most people don't realize that chimps have extremely sharp teeth. The sight of George gnashing them with rage in his eyes was terrifying. I'd never seen him like this. In fact, I'd never seen him be anything other than sweet and kind. Mom sensed I was frightened and put a hand on my shoulder to calm me. It's all right, she said. He's not trying to get to us. Something else triggered this reaction. Like what? Dad asked. He's in solitary. He can't see anything but us. Something must have changed, Mom said. We weren't doing anything. We were only looking at... She trailed off and turned toward the computer. I looked that way, too. On the screen, in full view of Furious George, was the blown-up photo of Astro's cap. It's him, I said. Mom wiped the photo from the computer. George calmed down almost as quickly as he'd flipped out. He stopped banging on the glass and baring his teeth. The rage in his eyes was replaced by a pained, almost ashamed expression, as though he was embarrassed about his behavior. Could that man have done something to him? Dad asked. Perhaps. Mom had a faraway look in her eyes, which she got when she was trying to solve a problem. But, like you said, it was hard to make him out, and George was a lot farther from the computer than we were. He wouldn't have been able to recognize a specific person. I wonder if he was responding to something else instead. Like what? I asked. What he was wearing. Mom returned her attention to the computer and did a Google image search for orange baseball caps. Get ready, she told me. This might get scary again. The monitor screen filled with photos of people wearing orange caps. Mom clicked on one and then stepped aside so that Furious George could see it. He went nuts again. One second he was calm, the next he was screeching and banging the glass. Mom wiped the screen once more. George went back to his normal self. Mom came to the viewing window and placed her palm against it. You poor thing, she said sadly. You poor, poor thing. George put his hand on the other side of the glass so his palm was facing hers. It's all right, Mom told him. You're going to be okay. What's going on? I asked. George's behavior is consistent with an ape that has been abused, Mom said. I can't say for sure whether or not the man in the video did it, but it seems quite evident that whoever did was wearing an orange baseball cap. I sat down, feeling like the wind had been knocked out of me. Even though I'd seen plenty of examples of humanity's cruelty, they still always caught me off guard.
"Do you think it was someone here?" Dad asked.
Mom shook her head. "It wouldn't have been any of my people, and the exhibits here are designed to prevent any visitors from harming an animal on display. I'd suspect that this was done to George before he arrived. He's only been here for a few months."
"Where was he before that?" I asked.
"A research facility in Houston," Mom replied.
"Home of the Astros," Dad said. "Probably a lot of orange baseball caps there."
Mom nodded, then swiveled her computer monitor so that George could no longer see it and opened a folder filled with movie files.
"What are those?" I asked.
"Video from the security camera that faces the crowd in the chimp exhibit," Mom told me. "Fun Jungle records everything that the cameras see and keeps it for 2 weeks."
"Why just 2 weeks?" I inquired.
"There are over 10,000 cameras at this park," Dad explained. "All that video takes up a huge amount of memory. The servers aren't big enough to keep everything forever, so security only holds on to what's important."
"Like this." Mom pointed at the video clips. "I asked security to send me the feeds from the exact times that George had his episodes. I've gone over them a few times already, figuring something in the crowd might be triggering him, but until now I didn't know what to look for."
She clicked on the file from the previous morning. The camera footage filled her screen. It was grainy and shot from an angle near the ceiling, so it was almost impossible to make out anyone's face. A timestamp at the bottom of the screen showed that the film was starting at 10:55 a.m. There were 16 people in the crowd. One of them was wearing an orange baseball cap.
"It wasn't Astro's cap, just a random visitor."
"There," Dad said.
"Got him,"
Mom said, then brought up the next video, which was from 3 days before at 1:37 in the afternoon. The crowd was much bigger this time. There was a group of elementary school children on a field trip. It took us a bit longer to find the kid in the orange baseball cap.
"There," I said.
"Looks like we have our trigger," Mom sighed. "I can't believe I didn't notice this before."
"Don't blame yourself," Dad said. "It's almost impossible to see until you know what to search for."
Mom nodded, but still looked upset with herself. She brought up a third video to confirm her theory. It was from a week before, just after 3 in the afternoon. There were only 5 people this time, so it wasn't hard to find the man in the orange baseball cap.
"Hey," I said, "that's Astro's cap."
Mom paused the video and enlarged it. It wasn't a great picture, given the angle of the security camera, but it definitely looked like the guy I'd seen around. He had the same thick build and was wearing sunglasses, even though he was inside.
"Looks like he's been spending a lot of time around here," Dad said suspiciously.
Before I could respond, the phone rang. Mom snapped up the receiver.
"Charlene Fitzroy."
The person on the other line said something. I couldn't hear it, but it made Mom look toward me surprised.
"Yes, he's here," she said. "But I'm his mother. Whatever you need to say to him, you can say to me."
She then listened, nodding a few times.
"All right," she said finally. "I'll give him the message."
She hung up and rolled her eyes.
"Who was that?" I asked.
"The personal assistant to J.J. McCracken," Mom replied. "The boss wants to see you first thing tomorrow."